CosmicRadio.tv.
This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Welcome to a fine edition of My So-Called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Biggs. Joining me today, remotely from his Palacio house in Florida, Petey Rave.
Howdy!
Howdy, sir. How's it going?
Pretty good. Just chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool.
Is that how we're gonna go? We're gonna start shooting some people outside school? God, that's another damn thing that like also is never is gonna die is Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Will Smith would love it to die.
I think he's more than willing to milk that nostalgia teat whenever he can. Especially when he has a shit movie with his son to come out and he needs to distract people from the reviews.
All right, before we start talking about today's real thing, when do you think they're going to, did they ever make, okay, because I know they made Saved by the Bell the new class, and they've obviously made as of late Fuller House. Have they made the sequel show spinoff to Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Nah. See, and here's for fans of my co-hosts on either Fanny Pack or Halley Juku, who may, you know, also check out Two Nerdy Black Guys. They even had the discussion on there. There's been Fuller House. There's been talks of other shows. All of these, like, remakes and re-releases, no shows of color. And, like, you don't see a Fuller... Like, where's the Family Matters, you know, sequel series? And the other thing, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I know that Will Smith doesn't get along with... whoever was one of the ladies that played the mom on the show, or the aunt to him, but like the mom of the family. We wouldn't have her, but we can get them together.
Well, because Uncle Phil's dead, right? I think the actor that sadly played him had passed.
Carl Weathers, is it not? He unfortunately passed away.
Yeah.
Great character. But we still have Alfonso Ribeiro. We still have Tatiana Ali. We still have a lot of people, and it could just be them.
Yeah, it could be Will, and he hooked up with that girl, and that's all he need. It could just be Will Smith doing his own thing. It doesn't matter, because you're absolutely right. I'm so surprised we had I am now more amazed that there hasn't been
talks. Where's my Que Pasa USA remake?
I'm more surprised there isn't talks about a new family. At least, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, fine, we can, that's NBC. But ABC's already proven that they have no shame and that they will make a new spinoff of whatever. So why isn't there talks about a new Family Matters? Now I want to know that answer.
Well, James Avery was
Uncle Phil. Who's God? Now we're going down this pipeline, and we have.
They could totally make a Family Matters. Like it's in we know thanks to crossover episodes that they're in the same universe.
Oh God, yeah,
Family Matters and Full House.
That's so, right. I forgot about those. I forgot about that. Oh my
God. That time that Urkel accidentally drop shipped into the Full House backyard. Because of an experiment, it's like you're parachuting down the backyard, and it just hangs out with the Tanners.
Oh God, that's right. That's right. I forgot Urkel was. What is speaking of another actor, we're talking about this, and this is something that if you're a patron, you'll hear because it's in the hidden pre-show. Whatever happened to Jaleel White?
He's still acting. I think I think I will give him credit. He's still being a working actor.
Well, because the last time I had saw him,
but he's a working actor.
Yeah, the last time I saw him, and this is how random it was like on a very minor walk-in role for Bones. Bones, typically the show will have before the case is found, they'll have like a weird like micro story about, you know, of how the case gets found. It's always kind of a weird thing. And it was like Jaleel White and like his wife going into a house and then like a body was found or something like that.
Yeah.
And like that was the last time I ever saw
like
him.
A well-connected inmate or something like that. Well, it was him. Like apparently it was like an inmate or something. And I know that I've seen on an episode of like Psych, I think. Was the show, and like he's been on an episode of Castle like last year.
There you go.
So like he's been on an episode of the new Hawaii Five-0. He's been on CSI.
All right.
He's one of those actors.
No, that's good. No, I'm always glad that that's the case, because I'd rather it be that they're working on something than like just fall into obscurity, because
he's right at the level where, you know, they could afford him. Like Netflix could afford bringing
him. That's
what
I'm saying, you know. I mean, Urkel and you know, just have, I mean, it was apparent that Urkel and what's her face were going to hook up. I mean, didn't they hook up for a bit? Urkel and
So I watched Family Matters.
No, I know this. This is why I'm asking, because I'm forgetting a lot of
and
the
I
weird
remember
facts.
It's indelible in my mind. Steve Urkel was ended up with Maya, the wonderful Maya, who was portrayed by a wonderful actress who unfortunately passed away shortly after the end of the show.
Really? I did not know this.
Yes, I remember all this. It was Viola. Was it Viola? It was Maya. I mean, I don't remember. Okay.
I will find out now, because I am so now intrigued about who died and who didn't now.
So that was the case for Steve Urkel. Now, remember, I don't know if you remember this, Steve Urkel's alter ego.
And when Michelle he went Thompson into the was cool the person who played Maya, by the way.
Yeah.
Michelle Thomas, sorry.
Michelle Thomas, yeah. Unfortunately passed away.
Right.
Stefan Urkel was the alter ego, like the cool guy alter ego of yep. Steve Urkel. At some point, Urkel cloned himself, had his clone become Stefan Urkel, and become a completely separate human being.
Oh, that's right.
And Stefan Urkel ended up with Lisa.
And then Urkel just faded.
Which is probably why the Family Matters is being ignored.
Now that we talk about this,
it became a sci-fi show at the end.
You know, I think now that we reveal the plot, I think I know why we don't have a Family Matters second spinoff happening anytime soon.
At the end of the day, they could step that back.
And yeah, there's nothing that they can't retcon. They can pull a Rocky. There's nothing that says they can't reboot.
Calm it down. They could have it exist.
Never
talk about the cloning. They could have Steve Urkel and Stefan Urkel. Just never really talk about how they got the two. You know, you could just have it with the assumption that they're just twin brothers, you know?
I actually just remembered this. I forgot about this.
In case you were wondering what the joke behind Too Many Cooks is, it's literally, for those that don't know, Too Many Cooks, if you're wondering what the hell Too Many Cooks is about, when you watch it, if you still care, it's how constant changes and influences from outside sources can corrupt a show until it's completely unrecognizable.
Yep.
If you wanted a real life example, watch the entirety of Family Matters.
I had forgotten until you mentioned the whole Stefan thing. I'd forgotten that there was an episode because basically the way Stefan came into play, and this is now we're fucking really revealing our age and really digging deep, but it was like it was this like weird porta potty device that like you put DNA in and stuff happened and like transformed, you know, which I don't understand that. I don't understand what part of you know, what DNA influenced Stefan. But I remember at what point they put in Bruce and like it was essentially Bruce Lee's DNA or something like that and made Urkel like a fucking badass that was like, you know, doing kung fu and crazy shit like that for like an episode and a half. Cause, you know, that's what we did. But god damn, that is a I mean, again, I guess it's the 90s. That was a thing. But, like, what was it that required – you know, I really – you know, only because I know what I know about TV and I know about comedy, I want to know how that meeting went down in the writer's room. I really want to know, like when they decided that was a great idea. Let's do this. Or even better yet, we're going to stop this and go on to talk about South By because I want to talk about South By already. But I want to know, you know, the arguments that happened to like, no, we need Laura to get together with Stefan. How can we do it? Well, I guess we could make him clone himself. And just like, yes, that's the – like how do you get to there? How?
It's just a lot. And Snoosh in the chat points out that I said it backwards. Yeah, Family Matters was first. Too Many Cooks happened, obviously, recently. But it's like
But that means that's the joke.
Wanted to go back and see like the real thing. It's like if you've seen Spaceballs and want to see figure out what it was parodying, you go watch Star Wars. Right. If you see Too Many Cooks, figure out what
it was parodying. Watch TG. Just go to TGIF. Do a Google search for every program that was ever on there, and that because I guarantee there is probably some like just ginormous mess in. Because
I think Family Matters, I think, was a very special case of a lot of things.
Because I would love to have known, like, whatever happened to, like, the, like, this is how bad it is. Like, I don't remember what the main, the last thing, like, storyline was, like, for Step by Step.
Nobody remembers Step by Step anyway, so.
thank God they don't, because that was a... what was his name? Was it Patrick?
Patrick Duffy.
Yeah, Patrick Duffy's like last ride.
There wasn't the thing about Step by Step, it wasn't exceptionally bad, but it also wasn't exceptionally good. No. It was bland. It was bland and paint my numbers. That's why nobody remembers it. Like
We want to bring Brady Bunch into the new era, but we can't reboot Brady Bunch exactly. So let's just do this. And it was like, wow, this is...
Same, yeah. And it was the same bland formula that Brady Bunch created, which was, how do we have more of these sitcom archetypes? Have more children.
Yes.
It's like, this one's the brainy kid. This one's the bits. This one's the sarcastic one. You know, this one's
my favorite was my two favorite archetypes. I couldn't even tell you. I think one of them I don't even know. I have like the name on the tip of my tongue, but I don't know if it's the name, so I don't want to say it. My two favorite archetypes in that show was the alt, because it was the 90s, was like the alt generation girl that was like, you know, the sarcastic one. Like she just literally stepped out of Roseanne because that's what you did in the 90s. And of course the spunky tomboy-esque character, which I could not even tell you their names. I could not even tell you. It's such a
I'm looking. The only one I remember was I was about to say TJ, but then I looked. I just looked it up. It was JT. Even I was remembering that one wrong. That was the only one. I was like, man, I at least remember that name. Didn't God remember. We were talking about Al Lambert. Which was the tomboy, and Dana.
Dana was the name that was on top of my tongue, but I couldn't remember who the fuck Dana was. I was like, I could not remember which.
Nobody remembers who the
which
fuck
bitch
Dana
was Dana.
Nobody
like, that's needs what, to. Remember the name Dana, and that's what the problem. It was like in my brain of like Dana, which one was Dana? But I know that name was there, and that's how much Step by Step like really influenced any of my.
It lasted for 7 years.
Well, Petey, I mean, you got to make.
And I guarantee you, nobody remembers anything about that show.
Of course not. I barely remember.
I just remembered that the kooky neighbor, which was the guy living in the backyard, was the guy who was in the Kickboxer movies.
I didn't even realize that. I totally forgot.
I forced myself to remember that. I forced myself to remember that.
See, the only thing I remember from TGIF with any like vivid memory. Was the very special episode of Home Improvement where JTT was found with like weed in his.
Yeah. Like, oh, this is. I remember the. speaking of JT, I remember the special episode of fucking Step by Step, right. Which is the only episode I remember was when JT had dyslexia.
It's great. All right, we're done with this. We're done talking about this. Let's actually talk about, about South by Southwest. Now, for those who have no idea why I usually have Petey on, I wanted Petey on for a while because Petey was actually this is your second year coming to music, right? Because I know you typically would come to Interactive.
Yeah, so it was like a couple of years where I came for the kind of the Diamond Club chat realm stuff. I'm so wasted thing. I think I took a year off to focus on other like trips and stuff like that, and then I decided, well, let me check out. I specifically for one of the things that one of the events was the Trigger, but it was like there's this thing, but I also want to check out music just because I like going to shows and I like just hanging out in Austin. So, but I decided last year to just come in for music.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I think you and I both like I know what the Trigger event is. And I think that I'd have to imagine it was K-pop night because I think that was
it was K-pop night out. And again, it was the Trigger event, not the only reason, but yeah, it was like because of how much it expanded last year into a full showcase. And then it's like, oh, well, I can go see that, and I can also go see Japan Night.
Yep.
And I can also see a bunch of other shows or just wander around 6th Street for like a week.
But I'm actually glad that you have started coming to music, not because of all of Interactive. Interactive is as fun as it can be, and all the Diamond Club stuff is as fun as it can be. But sometimes, you know, with vacations, you kind of have to, you know, kind of pick and choose so your dates and how you get there.
Especially when you want to kind of at least do stuff for because I also go to these shows for the shows I do.
Right, exactly. So you have to figure things out. But I'm glad that you're starting to come more from music because I think, like, as much as I know, there's things to do, I think music's always been your, like, your jam, so to speak. Like, there's some people that I'm like, who come down for chat realm stuff. I'm like, I wish you would stay for music because I think as much as you enjoyed this, I think you'd enjoy music that much better. And Petey, you're always one person that's like, I think he'll like music a heck of a lot better than anything else because there's just all this music that I see. And you're just like, I remember like the year I went that you came for Interactive, like, hey, can you try to get a copy of this one CD for me from this thing? I had actually had a friend Rick ask him to buy it for me because I wasn't going to be able to go to the show at all. And it was like,
I was like, hey, could you give me like Lovex Stereo CD?
That's what it was.
I'm so sad. It's like,
yeah, because you start seeing all this stuff happening, and I'm glad that it was Korean night because like that like the first year it happened, it wasn't as it was sort of a like
it was just Soul Sonic, and then like on K-pop Night Out, it was like Jay Park and Hyuna for like a concert, and it was which was nice, but it's not a showcase.
Right.
And I was already committed to like going to like, Interactive for like another, South by Soul Wasted, which I had a blast at.
For sure.
I'm fairly certain that's the South by Soul Wasted. I got the picture, the iconic picture I've been using for everything Rebelli, aka the one that you use for this episode's image.
Yeah. Cause I think that was the year that we had
recreation.
Right. That was the Go Game year. That was like the second Go Game year, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. It was at a bar off East Austin, and I know that I was on team with Martin Thomas and Corey Cox of Double Toasted. And
You know what? I think on the last year that I went, I think we didn't really have a Go Game. Yeah, no. The previous year, we didn't have a Go Game in 2014.
Right.
I'm not remembering. Either way, we just kind of partied.
Right. Because 2015. Because 2014 was at Handlebar. 2013
was. I think 2013 was East Austin. Right. Like Handlebar was 2014, or maybe I don't know if it was a Handlebar, but there was things happening.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the East Austin place.
Right. Because 2015. Because last year, 2015 was your first year doing music in any capacity.
And then we're getting into rabbit hole.
But we'll it's important to set this up because I'm curious, especially from you, because I see it all the time and I have certain theories.
I didn't come to 2014. That's what it was. So 2014 was Handlebar. I didn't come. There was like so much other stuff happening.
That's what happens. But yeah, because 2015 was your first year at music. I know that. I know 2015 was your first year where you're like, I'm staying for music, Robert. I go, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then this year you're just like, I'm just coming for music. What made you shift to beyond, like, I mean, like, assuming that, I assume it was just vacation dates, but, like, what has been the biggest sort of thing that you've taken away coming to music in this past year, in your opinion?
Because I have opinions, for sure. There's so much more incentive for the days that there's like, there's so much more incentive for me to be able to just be downtown and wander around and do stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much more things for me to do and not just for, you know, not just be stuck in the same like group. Like there's a very common gripe. If you ever watch again, Shooting This Shit with Two Nerdy Black Guys, excellent podcast. They have a gripe, which I understand, where with some of our gatherings, we tend to just kind of clump into our own little group. And even if we're not really all interested in doing the one thing, just because it's that little group, we'll all just always clump into the group and always be together.
I fully agree. It's kind of why I as much as I love all my friends who come down to town, and I do, everyone's a great people, nothing wrong. I try my damnedest always at least to sometimes split away. Not because I want to split away, it's because, you know, either A, I need to center myself, go do something else, or that like before South by Southwest this year, since I was working it, I had literally went to, and it was like near a Whole Foods, I'd walk to Whole Foods, grab some food, end up meeting up with James Demon 5 because he was over that neck of the woods, and we just kind of hung out, chit-chatted for a bit.
Yeah, and like, you know, and Kaz and DJ M has done it where he comes to the Dragon Con, and, you know, or like at ASIN, when all the three of us are at ASIN, sometimes we'll just like go off and like,
yeah,
all right, I'm going to do this thing, all right, well, I'm going to do this other thing, or I'm going to do the other thing, and we kind of all split off, and then eventually we'll all end up at the same place, but then we'll do our own things and then come together.
And the beauty part about South by Music, I mean, as much as sometimes it gets really a little too crazy, in my opinion. Like you know, the day I never look forward to, and it's the day that I call the epicenter of fuck and you is South by Music during St. Patrick's Day. Like is this nuke that goes off every year, and I forget it's going to go off every year, and when it goes off, it's like, well, there's no way I'm walking around town anymore.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was Thursday. And
yeah, it was Thursday.
I think the only thing we did that was, I remember it was Swagger, Patty McSwag, aka Patrick Swagger, and Kiko Suave, aka Jaime. All of us driving down in Swagger's car.
Yep.
And trying to navigate downtown with all the people like riding around in green shirts. And like, it was funny.
Like, music is always a different crowd, but like that day is just like I had gone to the Japan night day show that day and kind of chit chatted and hung out there for a bit, and then we ended up walking to later on to jazz club for a jazz show, but just navigating this like sea of people, and I don't, and it's not, it's like. It's a sea of every walk of life, which is totally cool, and I'm not ever going to criticize that. But it's just this, it's just this like it becomes less of like, well, I want to be on Sixth Street and party. It becomes more of a, I need to get to that point. How do I push through this like just mass? And I mean like a mass of people. And I don't. There's no. You know, like if you're claustrophobic, like you should never, ever, ever go to Austin during St. Patrick's Day, let alone because it always happens during South By. And it's like everybody's here for that and everybody's here for St. Patrick's Day. And it's just like this a mess of people. Like there's no way to describe it. It's hard. And that because they closed Sixth Street down and it becomes this like this year they did some interesting things for sure. Like they actually made It was a kind of cool that like usually they never did this, but they actually like boarded off areas for like emergency, you know, vehicles and things like that, which is smart because.
Yeah. Whew. Well, yeah, they've done the smart thing of at least like closing it off to traffic. And
oh, yeah, they do it every year. They do that every Saturday typically. But like it's just it's a
they've done it like they've done it all week. Like they did. And smartly so. They were basically Sixth Street. It's just like. Like, or at least on some level, it's kind of blocked off.
Yeah,
even if it's just the through streets themselves.
So I think I know what I think I know the answer from this already, and I know I'm asking a question that I know the answer to, but I'm kind of curious because I missed this event. What was the event that you enjoyed the most during South By Music? I have a feeling I know what it is, but I'm
it's hard to gauge. So it was it's hard to gauge. So I think. The as far as met expectations and was an absolute blast throughout. It's hard. K-pop Night Out was fantastic. It was more that more or less met expectations, and it was absolute blast throughout. I think it was more like just I think accumulated fun was probably that, just because it involves staying there from noon
yep.
to seven in line. And then I was able to make friends in line, and I that's, you know,
that's
we hung
always
out.
The that's always sometimes the fun thing to do, especially at those kinds of events. Like I don't mind waiting in line for events. I do mind waiting in line for like restaurants and things like that. But when it's events or movies, and it's those sort of things that happen like once only you know only once either like premiere of a movie or you know the start of an awesome concert. If you meet the right people in line, you make friends in line who are also just as passionate about everything that you're going to. And typically that happens with music a lot, especially like your international stuff, like you know, K-pop night or J-pop, like Japan night. Like for me,
plus if you need somebody to watch your stuff while you yep. go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. What's great. I mean, cause I realized this past year, for Japan night and it never occurred to me until this year, you know, that there are people that I only see in the year during Japan night. It's kind of, and who are in town, mind you. But yeah. I only see them at Japan night, and it's such a weird thing of this yearly gathering of like the family, and it's very weird to think about that. But that's sort of what happens at these events, I think, is that you start like I guarantee if you come next year for K-pop night, you'll see the same people who are there. Like, hey, how's it going? And it becomes kind of a yearly thing, and it's sort of the fun. I think it's the fun thing of that. Like out of all the events I missed this year, I'm bummed that I missed the Nerd Showcase because I had to work that night on Saturday. That sounded like it was fucking amazing.
The Nerdcore Showcase. I think Nerdcore Showcase was another one that was an absolute blast, like more or less throughout. You know, that one had a bunch of really cool groups, people that I loved. I got to see, I said hi to Meg Ran for you.
Yeah. No, I saw, like, I had left Japan Night early, which I was bummed. We'll talk about Japan Night, you and I, because I'll probably talk again with Jonathan whenever I get him back on the show. But. I had left early, just in the hopes that I could at least say hi to Raheem. Cause I literally like, this is the weirdest year of South By that everything happened on the exact same day.
Like a lot of things. Yeah.
Like Raheem and team were playing at Friday at Voodoo Donuts. They were playing the same day as the Japan Day show. There was like, everything was happening at like this weird time of like it never happens that way. It last year didn't happen the way at all, but this year was just like everything happened at the exact same time.
Yeah, on Friday. And Friday was it was like that. It was I know that Soul Sonic once again put their show on Friday, which was more the Korean indie show, which was so I didn't get to see Neon Bunny, which is kind of a bummer, but you know, and honestly, next year there's part of me that is hoping that they change the day.
I do too. Because I would have liked to have gone to that. Because I heard this year, and this is only because I had heard from somebody at the Japan Night Day Show, one of the photographers that kind of hangs around with Rick and whatnot, that he mentioned like one of the bigger people of like a record company passed away within that.
I think Love Rock Records,
something like that. Yeah, label. You would know more than
something
I would.
Like that. And then like, I know that Love Exterior did like a little tribute to him.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
Which have been really cool. Again, there are nights where I'm like, and again for me, like the reason I tend to go to Japan night because indie music in general, and not to say anything bad about K-pop night. Next year, I'm probably trying to make an effort to go, but it always seems like.
It's a different night. Right. I think, and it's hard to, it's impossible to equivocate the two.
Of course.
Because I would say the where the equivalent of Japan night is the Soul Sonic show, which is, they're both showcases for up and coming or just on the cusp or a little bit, you know, have some notoriety indie groups and artists. They just happened at the same night.
Right, that's what bummed me out because like
K-pop Night Out doesn't have a Japanese equivalent. We don't have like J-pop Night Out.
Exactly, and that's kind of why I was bummed because I'm like when I saw that event, I'm like, yeah, that would be the event I would go to on that. And never, not in a bad way of Korea. You know, K-pop Night Out's always fun. You know, if you enjoy it, I'm not ever gonna say do not enjoy what you enjoy, especially when it comes to music.
But it's a different show,
right? Exactly, and that's always been.
I think we can talk about that. I don't know where you want to start with.
Well, let's start with the K-pop night, because I think that's the event for you that was your trigger for coming to music.
Yeah.
The first time, and that again to you, like for me, I always people hear me talk about this all the time. I have a yearly thing going to Japan Night every Friday because that's my weird mecha event. Yeah. What are you doing? You have one of those. Oh my god, one of the guys at Japan Night told me that these things exist. Explain what it is to the audio listeners. What the fuck is in your hand?
Talk about K-pop Night Out. We'll start with like the big ones, and we'll get onto how and expand to some of the other really cool stuff out on there. So the big one, there was a couple of big marquee acts. And we'll talk about those as well. But one of the big marquee acts for me,
yes,
and a group that I've been like standing since like they debuted in like 2014, and have been growing, and it's just fantastic, is Mamamoo. They're a really cool like vocal group. They're, you wouldn't call them an idol group, though. It's, you know, idol is kind of a genre more than it is anything else, but they're very much a vocal group, a talented vocalist. It's so funny you bring this up because
that was like basically South by, like I had learned from Rick and another person all about all the idol stuff, but anyways, continue, sorry Pete.
Yeah. They're fantastic. So Mamamoo is a really fantastic group. Four girls, fantastic vocalists. Three of them are world tier vocalists. One of them is really fantastic, though. She doesn't show it. She doesn't showcase her vocals because she's kind of shy. But she does a great job of kind of harmonizing. Moonbyul, I love you, Moonbyul. But she's kind of the rapper. So their name is Mamamoo. And they named their fan club, you know, the people that are the fans, you know, got to have them a nickname. That's a thing. They're the Moomoos. It's kind of a fun play on the word Mamamoo. And it's a cute name. The fan club is a cute name. So here's the thing. Some people have like heard Moomoo and realized Moo is Korean for daikon radish, specifically this kind of radish.
Oh my God.
If you've ever done Asian cuisine, a Moo is a daikon radish. So the fans, it's just an odd fan base, but it's such a fun fan base to be part of, started, cause like when you go to shows, you got to have like a light stick.
Of course.
So what they did is they started bringing actual radishes.
I knew it.
And started waving actual daikon radishes at the shows. And it was like this odd, fantastic sighting of like these radishes in the audience. It's fantastic. So when it was time to come up with an official light stick, there was a lot of ideas that were thrown around. They just decided, fuck it, let's make it real. Let's make it a thing.
Let's rewind a bit, because here's the question I'm going to ask you, and I mean this with all the love, and always remember this. What do you think a security guard, when there was like a Mamamoo concert coming in, and just started having to look through people's bags and seeing nothing but radishes, what do you think that he did?
I think it just kind of like accepted. It's like, all right.
Because after a certain point, you're just like, everyone is like, radish. Radish. You know, just like, you know, I can imagine some security guard just like, what's the world come to where I'm like looking through bags and all I see are goddamn daikon radishes.
It's like, I will say, I think it helps that they're probably a little bit more lax on outside food and snacks. Like, you know, like ball games, you can bring your own beer and things like that.
That's fair then.
So there was no thing of like in another concert, if there was a little bit
there was no radish,
you're not supposed to bring outside food here.
That's the point. That's exactly what would go through my brain. It's just like the idea of like, it's like, this is what I have to confiscate.
It's like, I mean, I understand bringing outside food. I understand trying to sneak in outside food, but a radish?
Exactly. Come on, exactly. Man. That's why I'm again, you know, I'm props to the band, and I'm glad that they've, you know, again, if there is something your fans are latched on, you know, are doing, and they've latched onto it, and you embrace it, you know, rock the fuck on, you know, continue doing that.
So that's what they did.
That is awesome. That's cool. I think that's a really cool touch. I think that's actually.
Plus, they come with stickers. Yeah, it comes with like all sticker sheets. so you can decorate it however you want.
No, of course. That's marketing, but that's still kind of cool that the fans generated something and the band is completely embraces it. Yes, yeah. On a marketing level, yes, for money in certain regards, but all that aside.
It fits with their personality, right, of exactly. Kind of not being atypical and being fantastic,
right? That to me is cool, and that's why I'm like, that's why I was laughing once you said like moves over there for Jack and Rash. Like, oh god damn it, I know exactly what's gonna go down the pipeline. And again, I want to know that first security guard when that started happening, just like him having to look at it. And again, only because things become a thing if a lot of people do said thing, and to note that for that to become a thing of like a product where you have and you have, you know, said, you know, light stick radish with mustache and everything else. That means to me that enough people in Korea, in South Korea, when they're going to my Moose shirt shows, brought enough radishes that had to have seen it about 80 times.
Yeah,
music
shows. It's like imagine more like this. So yeah. I don't think they've had like a concert yet. Because getting your first like solo concert, especially when you're in that level of like group, is a big deal. It doesn't really happen. Most of the times you work like you go to events,
right?
You go to, like somebody's like a festival,
correct?
Or like, and not music festival, more like the Rice Harvest Festival.
Yeah, whatever.
Or,
I mean, the equivalent of, I mean, it's not really
of like those things, but yeah. Like going to a music show,
right?
Because in music shows, they allow people in groups of fandoms, and there's like there's different for all of them, so they have to like group them together. And like see who has what like official merchandise. So you can imagine all the muumuus hanging together and the person organizing coming is like, the muumuus? Muumuus, are you all here? Do you guys have a light stick? It's like, no, but we have these. And then they hold up the radishes like, all right.
That's what goes through my mind is just some poor security guard who doesn't know what's going on has to deal with this. Not in a bad way.
And imagine less a big security guard, more like a small little like probably female concert organizer.
Yeah, like, they have to like go through PA. This like is their PA. Job. This is what their job has been reduced to. You know,
an intern.
This is rock and roll
TV
now.
Studio.
This is rock and roll now. I'm like. This is what my life's become. I will say this. I can only hope that like farmers markets of local areas in Korea, like just fucking swept the ground. Like I'm hoping like some like poor farmer saw this and just was like open a radish stand like right away like next to the concert as it's happening.
Well, it's got to be odd because again these will sell. They sell well. Daikon radishes sell well, obviously, because they are. I don't know if you know this, but they are one of the key ingredients to making various forms of kimchi.
Oh, I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, so that's okay. That makes sense then. So like, there's a radish kimchi. There's the cabbage kimchi. There's different types. So those sell well. But my idea is like, if they hadn't brought these light sticks, if there was like a radish shortage around kimchi making season, because like, the whole thing happened. I would say the whole radish thing happened when they weren't really quite like super mega stardom. They were kind of, they had their fan base and they had you know, their dedicated fans and people that loved them, but they weren't super rad, like they weren't super famous, and they more or less switched to these before they kind of full on hit. But if they had gone to like this level or the next level they're about to hit, and like they caused like radish shortages
again, I almost wish that they hadn't. I mean, I'm glad they did. Obviously that makes sense. I almost wish they hadn't. If for nothing more, then I would have loved to have seen like the farmer that had like the right of mind to know if I just put my stand like 10 feet away.
Yeah.
Where I can legally put it, I'm going to make a fucking killing. I can charge whatever the fuck I want for these radishes, and then people will pay for them. And he'll be right. He would be totally right. He'd make off of like one harvest like more money than he's ever made in his entire, you know, season as a farmer, just because of like the like shit. I forgot my radish. Yeah, here's whatever the equivalent of $10, $15 is. You know, That's all he had to do. Oh man, yeah. That would have been amazing.
But yeah, so the show was fantastic, and they were fantastic. I mean, if there was something to gripe about, it was very much they came on, they did their set, and then they left. It wasn't they're still very much a mainstream pop group, so it was very much a mainstream pop performance. For me, that was fine. I just got to be there and be crazy and silly.
Well, you knew what you were expecting. It wasn't like that. Like
it was what I was expecting. I think if for a showcase, there could have been opportunities for them to connect with the audience a little bit more. They did some fan servicing and stuff like that. But like there could have been better opportunities or giving more of a live performance. There could have been an opportunity, but it's what you expect. It's not like that was lacking from the night. But it was a fun show, and they were fantastic, and they sang beautifully, and like it was amazing. They did it during the performance, and they did it during like we could hear the sound check before, or I was guessing the rehearsal before for them. They do this kind of more of a ballad song called "I Miss You," and Solar, the kind of the lead vocalist, hits this power note that like during this when we were hearing the rehearsal. We were outside of the venue. They were inside. It was an outdoor venue, so it was not like there was much of a barrier. But it was like we could feel that power note from the outside, and like it was, and when she sang it during the show, it was like.
Someone asked this: was there an artist that you hadn't seen yet or hadn't really heard too much about that performed K-pop that was like completely wowed you? I mean, obviously, you know. Mamamoo, as you had stated, is a you know they're at a point in their career where they have you know they're selling light up you know light stick radishes which you
yeah
know,
and
to,
winning
to me,
music shows and whatnot
you know
I would say the big one the big one that was the big surprise for myself for a lot of people there and for and my Swagger as well was the opener Bye Bye Bad Man. I wasn't aware of them. Though you know, I was anticipating checking them out, and they were fantastic. Very tight performers, very nice sound, very cool indie sound with synth influences. They were fantastic, and they were a perfect opening act because they immediately injected the show with an energy that got everybody ready to go throughout the whole night. Like a lot of things on Record Breakers. On Fanny Pack Wrestling Podcast, and a lot of things, there's a big emphasis, and it's funny how many different mediums it works as a thing that is important to do. How you introduce yourself, the first impression is huge.
Yeah,
be it the first song in an album, you know, the Record Breakers thing, the first match on a wrestling on a wrestling show, oftentimes is almost if not more important than the main event, like. The first impression you make is huge, especially for like a show.
I could not agree more. I mean, especially music-wise.
Yeah, and it creates the impression for the rest of the night. And they were fantastic. They were a huge surprise. Apparently, like they were, they after the performance, they were like selling their CD left and right. Yeah, it was running out.
Like for me, and that is always the case for a lot of times when I see artists, like especially when it comes to international acts. Yes, I'm in Japan, not typically, but I always see the bands that I always remember from each night are the bands that basically how do I best explain it? That they bring an energy with them, you know, that they kind of pull out something out of me. Typically, you know, and here's a tip for any international bands coming stateside and they want to somehow get the crowd on their side. This is a very easy technique to do in terms of that. You still have to make your own, so you just can't just do this. But if you play the cover of an American song, it's a lot easier to get the American crowd on your side. You have to kind of do it still creatively. Like you can't just like, you know, like, oh, play a song, whatever. Like I remember like the night, and I always fucking tell a story. Every fucking year I tell a story and I'm telling it again. Because, you know, that's all we are. But, like, one of my all-time favorite moments of Japan Night was when we heard literally a bluegrass cover of Saito Johnny playing a bluegrass cover of Daft Punk's One More Time, you know. But you're absolutely right. Like, energy – like, I remember, like the year before when I went to the Perfume concert, it had an opener act of I forgot the guy's name, a Korean producer that I'd mentioned the name to you. He was like in like a weird silver suit, like almost looked like he was ready to go like work with Molten Core Lava.
Oh, Hitchhiker. It was Hitchhiker. Earlier, it was last year.
Yeah, and that was like a mind-blowing like energy of just like, what the fuck is this? Who the fuck is this? And why the fuck aren't we getting more of this? Not to have on perfume, but it's just like, this shit could be playing like at a club like yesterday. Yeah. And I was like, blown away.
Yeah, I saw Hitchhikers last year at K-Pop Night Out, and it was a cool, like, it was a different, because enough like moment in the show that set a really good pace, because it was, if I remember correctly, it was right after Crayon Pop. So it's like Crayon Pop was the pop group that would perform like the pop show and things like that. And that was fun. We all danced around.
Right, of course.
Like, and then it was like this different shift in mood for Hit.
And then it's like Step Over Kids, you know, Papa's coming to fuck you up and just it was drop just the DJ beat. Set.
Yeah, for those that are confused about what we're talking about, it was basically what it does is just he does a DJ set.
Yeah.
And you know, he creates mixes and he kind of, or just mixes tracks together and beat matches and stuff like that. And it's fantastic. It and was, it was a great energy. It's
it like, was fucking amazing. It was fucking, I thought shit. I was just like, this is, like, I could have had that be my concert the entire night. And it was like a very weird
It was
weird
actually,
feeling.
Yeah, it was actually, I think that was, compared to that, that was probably one of the only disappointments, I would say, with K-Pop Night Out, which was in just after Mamamoo was the artist Haim, which is, again, an electronic artist. How she does is she kind of constructs music scapes and with a synthesizer and like a sequencer, I believe. And I didn't quite catch a glimpse of her career, but she does that. And it was an interesting shift in mood, but it definitely... I'd say it did kind of bring the energy down a bit, which is not necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes you can kind of shift it into a calmer state and then kind of finish things off in like kind of a more of a groovy feel. But I think if there was a little bit more of she had a little bit more of a dynamic performance like Hitchhiker did last year, in more or less kind of the similar spot, I think it would have been. It would have been a lot better.
It's always tough to figure out band lineup and who's going to be a headliner, especially when it comes to international acts. You never quite, you know. Yeah. And I know that at least on the K-pop night, I think a lot of the Korean government helps out, at least with the funding, I think. I have to check that.
Well, they help out with the funding, getting people over. You know, right. Southeye, I imagine, is not going to relinquish control over who they showcase, but like
no they ultimately there's a board that helps out with that stuff, but I know that whereas Japan Night, I mean, not to say that Japan Night doesn't have sponsors as well, they have their own sponsors and things like that, typically, you know, some type of service or whatever, but when it comes to K-pop, I remember that was the big thing, was that it was way more of a production.
I have the poster somewhere, there's like, you can see like COCA, the Korean like culture and like something art administration,
and, right? Like, and we've like talked about, you know, I've talked about many times the show that if I were to say that, I mean, and this is just, you know, whether it's just business, it's not necessarily what I'd like to be, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Koreans' cultural export typically is at least as of late has become, you know, music for sure.
Yeah, it's music, there's dramas, right. There's like things like that. It's all very polished and very nice. And like, you know, there was a lot of really cool acts. But I think the biggest thing was diversity when it came to K-pop Night Out. It wasn't just K-pop Night Out. It was a diverse set of acts that really showcased kind of what is happening, I think, on from the mainstream to just below mainstream level of Korean music. I think that was cool. I love Exteria, were fantastic as always, and I've gushed about them a million times and other things, so I won't dwell on them.
They're a very well-known Korean act. I mean, like I may not be the biggest into Korean music, but I know Love Exteria, like,
but it might partially be me because I gush about them all the time.
Before you, I mean, I like, it's the one thing I wish, you know, because again, I always hear about Korea Night, you know, K-pop Night Out. I am always afraid to go because I'm not because I'm anti-Korean music. Dear Lord, no. That's why I would love to go to Soulsonic, because that seems like way more my speed, way more my type of music in general. But always K-pop night always scares me, because again, it's that pop moniker. And I've nothing against pop existing. If you like pop, by all means, rock the fuck out and do not let me say anything else. It's just not my style of music. And so I'm always hesitant to go, because it's like, if I have to see an idol act, I go like, I understand everyone here loves this idol act, and by all means, keep on rocking out, you know, move, you know, shake those radishes, do whatever it is you need to do to, you know, to expend that good energy. Do not let me stop you. But for me, it's always that, like, well, now I got to suffer this to hear a cool act, hopefully. And like, I hope next year for my sake and for your sake that they move Soulsonic to something else, because I would kill to see that. That would totally be my speed.
I might, and even if they do put it in the same with Japan, I might go to Soulsonic specifically just to at least see it.
Yeah, no, like, for sure.
And that might, it would hurt to skip Japan night.
That was what
has a little piece of my heart, but I want to check it out.
And I think that's the overarching thing, and we're pretty much out of time. But I think that was the over weird arching theme this year for me, was that I had to miss a bunch of stuff because I needed to go to stuff like for Japan night, and then I really haven't talked too much about it. I will talk about that more in the future.
Yeah.
Like this year, three bands couldn't make it.
Surprise
enough, they're actually performing a show in Japan, and they'll record it and release some video of it, which is kind of cool. It's weird that they actually became friends and are now performing in Japan, which, you know, happens. But because of that, like, I felt almost the need this year to really be there in some type of solidarity of like, all right, now I have to go, because – I mean, not because I would have gone. It's just like, now I have to be there, because this is weird – it was – and again, weird night, and you will hear those things, you know, that story later on. But,
I wanted to kind of, before we finish off, like, give my thoughts. So a couple of things. I think with K-pop Night Out, there was a couple of thoughts. Like, they ended up with Dean and Zion T. Dean being a very modern R&B group, not group, singer. Very modern, kind of like, if you're into like the mainstream R&B now, it has that touches while doing his own thing. And Zion T being more of an old school, long standing kind of hip hop R&B guy. Ended with Zion T. Zion T was an interesting performance, which a lot of variations, with Dean being more hype. I will say, if they had flipped those two, the pace would have been a lot better. But unfortunately, Zion T is the sunbae, or the senior. So I doubt Dean would have given him that spot. So it ended up with a kind of a weird thing. But I think of what I thought. And Japan Night. Japan Night was fantastic. And I think I was going to say, for kind of being the surprise and the little piece of my heart that of this really great little show that showcases such a great variety of different indie groups, it was just a great night. And I think like three bands can make it. So it's like, let's circle the wagons.
Yeah. Essentially.
Japanese act together.
Well, we'll go into right now. I for those who do not understand, I'll tell the story, because I'd actually talked with one of the guys at South By, because when the news hit for Chaos, like one of the bands was performing that they were able to make it through customs, I was like, oh, it's actually one band. Then we learned it's three. And I'm friends with a lot of the guys that work Japan Night, and friends with a lot of the guys that are part of like the South By committee now for that side of things. I'm actually now friends with one of the good ones there. Again, someone I see all the damn time at Japan Night, and now we actually are more friends with that. And so it became kind of the conversation. Essentially, for a quick sum up, they ran into some visa issues. I won't really go into all the details, because a lot of that's just, you know, becomes whatever. And so three bands were kind of literally sent back home. Back home to Tokyo after, you know, chilling 20 hours in flight and then everything else. And
if you want some context, if you are aware of what happened to Oh My Girl last year, a K-pop group, basically the same thing.
Yeah,
just visa.
It happens, and I don't want to go into details, because I just like that's not the as silly as it is. That's really not the important part of the story. I think that's just sort of the weird thing that happened. And so it became Japan Night, where you have like three of the acts just basically could not make it.
Yeah.
And so what happened was that And I don't know how the hell Audrey pulled it off. Audrey Kimura of Ben 10 Records, person who one of the people that I love to death and that you know, I see every year. She's there. She's pretty much the person that runs this damn thing, along with other people, South by Committee and South by Japan, everything else like that. Somehow, I have to imagine that a lot of this was P-Liner Yellow, which I forget his real name. Because I feel terrible, I do, but he's honest in my spirit animal and one of the people that I respect a lot of, in a weird way, and actually is one of my bigger weird influences in my life. Somehow we were able to get, like, we got like a fucking psychobilly act, which was amazing.
We got
Ed Woods, which was like,
first of all, we got
fucking
like
amazing psychobilly. Let's just flat out say that right now. Like,
it was wild. It was like a psychobilly with a lot of other things thrown in there. Sound
everything
it
I
wasn't,
needed.
It wasn't like definitive psychobilly, but it was that influence. And like,
so we have a fan base. There's some psychobilly in there.
Yeah, and then, you know, the upright bass. And of course, it also involved him, the upright bassist, undressing to his underwear and shampooing himself.
So goddamn punk! It's not
P-Liner Yellow.
Yep.
Stage diving, and almost getting a concussion if it weren't for a buddy Swagger.
Well, that's exactly like the thing is that what bugged me. I was just like, it's like these motherfuckers have never been to a punk concert before. Like, I was ashamed. I was disturbed. I'm like,
to be fair, I didn't know P-Liner Yellow was there and had stage dived until he was already in the crowd.
So, I saw him like doing like, you do not fucking drop Yellow. If I were in there, I would have fucking held him up. So if Yellow wants to stage dive, you let the motherfucker stage dive.
Looking at like, or like maybe trying to post something on Instagram to kind of update people. And I looked up and P-Liner Yellow was in the crowd.
This is a punk concert, bitch. And I think that's what it was. I was just like, it's like this motherfucker's never been to a punk concert before. And I realized what I was liking about it.
Aware.
Yeah, it's like, this motherfucker's never been a fucking goddamn psychobilly punk concert before. I'm ashamed.
Yeah, but then we also got a pretty major act in Alexandros. Yeah. You know, who are signed to a major label, signed to Warner Music Japan, I believe. And I was not aware that they were a big deal. When I posted them on Instagram, all of my notifications coming in on a constant basis made me realize, oh, they might be a big deal.
I knew they were a big deal. But let's cut to the really.
Yeah, Alexandros played a cool set, and they're fantastic. But the big thing.
Yeah, let's just cut to the fucking chase. The thing that and I will say this as the key part of the story. And when Jonathan comes on the podcast later on, I've still got to schedule that, and we had to figure out some scheduling stuff. We'll probably talk exclusively about this. And I told Audrey. Because when we're done, I go, I don't know how the fuck you pulled this off. I don't know what fucking favor you called in, you know, how the fuck you got this to happen. but was it Yoshiki? I think
Yoshiki of X-Japan,
which is
who was in town promoting the We Are X documentary,
right?
Who had just performed like across the city.
Yeah, basically he performed at a venue. That is like basically he performed at a solo show at a venue that's exclusive to come essentially to Elysium and perform. Well, the greatest thing, and this is the greatest thing, because I tweeted this out and you joke about, you know, your thing getting a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I think my tweet got like the most retweets and like favorites I'd ever done of anything. The joke I'd make is, you know, that it's a weird Japan night, and it was a very strange Japan night because of this. When your filler act is, you know, and I include his official Twitter handle, and it was so funny, like to see a lot of the crowd change and shift, and it became this thing, because he came on stage, he's like, "Hi, I'm whoever from X Japan," everyone's like, you know, cheering, whatever. I heard that a bunch of bands couldn't make it, and I mean, I'm Japanese. And this is for
Japanese. I'm just having to be Japanese.
I'm having to be Japanese. It's like I'll play two shows, because it was a very bizarre thing. Because all he played were two songs, because that was all the time he had, and that's all the time we needed. But it was this weird thing of like, I've never been invited to Japan Night before. It's like, yeah. We can't hold you, sir. This is at capacity because you tweeted it because we were here already for Japan Night. It was pretty packed, but not totally packed. And then like I look behind me and it's just like the sea of people like that, you know, as much people could fit in Elysium, I'd imagine. There are probably people outside that couldn't get into the show at that point. And it was a very, again, a very strange night. And I realize I haven't talked too much about it. I'm holding a lot of it in because a lot of it was just a very weird musical night. But I think that was like that was such a strange highlight of things to happen.
Well, it was funny because like it was like there was a lot of buzz of like, oh, who's going to come on? Who's going to come on? And then people were kind of figuring it out.
Yeah.
Or I don't know who got noticed. But then suddenly like a string quartet popped up on stage.
I had heard
what had to be like 5 minutes of background music. Like
because apparently that was a video, and I learned this from Jonathan McNamara. Apparently, or I learned it from his significant other or I forgot who told me, but one of them told me this. It's essentially a video that plays before the show kicks off. And I guess because Elysium was not equipped for this.
Yeah.
Elysium is like, not I love Elysium. It's a great venue. It's a good place for a certain type of band, like typically a goth band or an alternative band or whatever. We ain't equipped to have a projector of like crazy shit like that the way it was done. And it was so funny for me was because Jonathan was kind of hanging around the side. And I was like, so you know who's coming out next, right? He's like, oh, P-Liner Z? I go, no, just come. I told him it was Yoshiki. He's like, no way. He's like, no. Because, again, that is so out of, like, left field.
Yeah.
And like, not even a pipe dream. That's not even like, oh, it could happen. It's like, that's not even in any dream. You know, that's nowhere in any kind of thing.
Yeah.
But... He walks up the stage, sees the kawaii piano, and is like, it's him. Makes the biggest beeline to, like, as close as he can get to the stage before everyone else realizes what the fuck's going on. Because once everyone realized what the fuck was going on, like...
Things start to buzz, and then it plays, like, the whole video... Well, the whole audio of that video, but no video, which is hilarious. And you see these lovely young ladies, the string quartet, just kind of sitting there in their seat, kind of look around. And then he comes out like the aging rock star that he is. Like he just is fantastic. It was fantastic. He gets up on stage, plays the song, does that little thing that we mentioned. Says, "Hey, I'm Yoshiki. I'm from Extra Pain. Thought I'd come in here and help out."
Yeah.
Plays another song. Leaves.
Yeah. It was so weird. It was such a bizarre. Like again. A hyper bizarre moment.
In all fairness, both of the songs were really lengthy.
Oh yeah, no. Jonathan had said like he's probably only gonna play like Jonathan because I only know so much of like X Japan, but I don't know as much about the solo career of Yoshiki. But like, the way he had explained it to me was that like he's probably only playing one song because like hyper long. I go okay, that's cool. But he played two songs and you're absolutely right. Like they're long. You know they're classically it's very classically trained piano songs. They're great. They're amazing music. Like I'm never gonna say that. I would love, maybe one of these years I'll figure out a way to get into a show like that. Because like Jonathan had ditched us to go see that performance at one point in time, and it was a very strange thing seeing that happen in wake of everything that had happened. And probably the there are stories we'll tell every year. That'll probably one story we'll tell every year. And it's just you almost just had to be there because there's nothing I can explain that seeing so many people. I just tweeted out and seeing so many people like amazed and flummoxed by the fact that here I am. Close to that. What was even funnier was that like I was watching a Rooster Teeth content later on. I think the next week, and like Meg Turney was talking about X Japan and how she had flipped out. Man, if only she was at Japan Night, she would have fucking lost her shit. And it was such a funny thing of like hearing Meg Turney talk about this, on an internet show that I watched. Just like she wasn't there at that event. If only she was there, she would have just lost every fucking soul of it. And because Elysium's a very intimate club, like we're within touching distance of the man. If anything fails, like we are because of the way the venue is, It's like it's a venue that if this were happened in Japan, like there would be a riot in front of the club.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's kind of the level we were at. It was a very very bizarre night, very strange thing. All right, Petey, we are fully out of time.
Yes,
Petey Rave, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Where can people hear your other stuff? Where can people hear you talk about all the Korean music that you just talked about now? But if they want to hear more in detail, in depth coverage, where can they go, sir?
So you can go on kpoppodcast.com, hallyjuku.com, you're going to figure out the name. I have been a little bit intermittent. We have been a little bit intermittent with our recording and posting of that show, but it's just a lot of stuff and busyness. And it's just a lot of work to record that show for a show that isn't really my marquee show, if I'm being honest. Like, as much as I love it, and it's really just a fun passion project, and I love doing it. But there is a new episode out this week, and I will get it together and post it. We did our own recap of all the East Asian pop culture stuff going on at South By with Patrick Swagger. Kind of had a little round table thing, including Japan. We go on depth on all the different acts and how much Swagger absolutely loved Ray, who killed it. Let that not be forgotten. And once Vincent and Jonathan McNamara get together, you're gonna hear all about that. That was a fantastic show, because there was Japan Night after Yoshiki, and that was a great show.
I hope a lot of it back, because it's, you know, we're almost out of time, but there's so much. But
If I would give my hot take, I would say if I had just seen everything past Yoshiki, I would still have been happy.
That was, I will say this, that was the day show for me, because I saw everybody that played the day show was pretty much everybody that played the end of Japan Night. And so that's why I didn't feel bad bouncing early, because I saw everybody. But Ray was phenomenal. But anyway, sorry, continue with the plug, sir.
How did you go? Rebellion.net for this and other shows, including Record Breaker. For that and other shows, including Record Breakers. And Rebellion TV on YouTube. Rebellion TV on Twitch, if you really feel like it. I don't stream often, but sometimes I just randomly get on there and stream something. Like a baseball simulator. I don't know. I did that once. Or maybe Overwatch when that comes out. Because I was never invited to the fucking beta. God damn it. But yeah, it's all stuff. Happen. Subscribe, like, share, all iTunes, Stitcher. Go find Petey Rave on Twitter and everything else.
There you go. Of course, you want to find me. I'm at Vincent404 there on Twitter. If you want to catch previous episodes of this podcast, you can head to our website, cosmicray.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links to the show notes, our Twitter account, which is at 8bitlife podcast, and of course, other shows on the network. And if after you've supported all the Korean pop bands that Petey tells you to go buy, all the music, everything else, after you've bought your light up radish light of joy and happiness, and you happen to have a few, you know, dollars or cents, or I forget what the Korean currency is off the top of my head. If you have a few of those left in your pockets, head over to patreon.com/8bitlife and help this podcast get bigger, better, and more awesome. So that's it for today. Until next time, talk to you about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people. This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.